With the state of today's economy, it's more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made from the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back in your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality, made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
This is LBC London News.
23 minutes past four right now, and it really has been a gruesome week on both sides of the Atlantic. Started with the Orlando nightclub massacre in which 49 people were killed, and ends up with Britain mourning the killing of the Labour MP Jo Cox yesterday. She's been mourned around the world, and her death is front page news in the United States. So let's go live to America now, and joining me are Washington correspondent Simon Marks. Very good evening to you, Simon. Clearly, Jo Cox, not a well-known figure in the US, but her death really has brought some very prominent reactions.
Yes, it has, Chris. I mean, it was notable that an American media that spends so much time covering gun violence here in the United States suddenly found itself covering an incident of gun violence in Yorkshire. And if you look at the newspapers here today, the Wall Street Journal has a large front page article about the killing of Jo Cox. It also raises questions about whether her death is going to have any impact on the Brexit referendum. The New York Times has extensive coverage that began online yesterday and goes into the print edition of today's newspaper as well. And her death bringing reaction from at least two prominent politicians here. One of them, Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords. You may remember that she herself nearly died when she was shot during a constituency meeting in a supermarket car park in Arizona back in 2011. She was very seriously injured, has slowly recovered over the intervening years from her injuries, and she put out a statement yesterday saying she was absolutely sickened by the news from Birstall. She called it a manifestation of the coarseness in modern politics. She said it demonstrates hatred towards others that society must not tolerate. And there were very similar echoes of that statement in a statement that Hillary Clinton put out. She called Joe Cox a rising star. She said it is cruel and terrible that her life was cut short by what she called a violent act of political intolerance. And she said the US and Britain must now honour Jo Cox's memory by rejecting bigotry and standing together against hatred and violence. It isn't just here in the United States that her memory is being honoured. There were some extraordinary scenes on the floor of the Canadian Parliament up in Ottawa, where Nathan Cullen, a member of the Canadian Parliament who knew Jo Cox well, they had apparently met through the work that they'd both done on Syria, took to the floor of the Parliament and paid this emotional tribute to her.
Mr. Speaker, I rise to pay tribute to the life of Jo Cox, a mom of two beautiful children, and a friend, a dedicated Labour MP and a long advocate of human rights in Britain and around the world, who was murdered today. Her husband, Brendan, said it beautifully. She would have wanted two things above all else to happen now, that our children are bathed in love and that we all unite to fight against the hatred that killed her. To Brendan, to Joe's beautiful children, we express our deepest condolences.
Very emotional scenes in the Canadian Parliament in Ottawa. He had to stop delivering that statement midway through it because he was unable to continue, but he was met with a standing ovation.
Now, Simon, we're just getting some breaking news here. Police forces are contacting MPs around the country to give security advice following the death of Jo Cox. This is according to the National Police Police Chiefs Council. Now, obviously, President under high security, as is our Prime Minister David Cameron. But those other MPs, those other lawmakers, not given the same security, really, as the leaders of both the American government and also here in the UK. What sort of security advice or protection do lawmakers in America get already?
Well, it is a little bit different here for a couple of reasons, Chris. I mean, first of all, remember that members of Parliament in Britain are much more likely to get down in the weeds with their constituents and hold local surgeries on a regular basis and feel truly, genuinely anchored to their constituencies than many members of Congress or the Senate feel to theirs. Now, senators, there are only 100 of them, two from each state, do receive a level of protection. I can tell you in our offices here, we have a radio studio that is fairly regularly visited by members of the US Senate, and on occasion there will be a security sweep before they arrive to participate in a radio interview. So senators, because they are the more senior figures, tend to get some degree of security. Members of the House of Representatives, I mean, it's a bit more analogous with MPs. They do go back to their districts at weekends. They do hold local meetings. Congresswoman Giffords was doing precisely that when she was brutally attacked and a number of other people who were present at the scene died in that horrific onslaught. This is a challenge for both countries, the United States and the United Kingdom. How do you maintain ties with voters in your constituencies without putting yourself at substantial amounts of risk? And as Joe Cox discovered tragically, and Gabrielle Giffords discovered as well, you know, you are on occasion simply exposing yourself to enormous risk.
Absolutely. Scotland's First Minister Nicola Sturgeon just saying that MPs must not become detached. But let's move on to another story, obviously. In a way, Simon, 5 days on from the Orlando massacre and just the day after Joe Cox's killing, very similar conversations underway on both sides of the Atlantic about what caused these awful acts of violence.
Yeah, I mean, it's been very striking to me, Chris, to listen to the conversation that's been taking place in the UK over the last 24 hours or so. It's not dissimilar to the conversation that's been happening here in the United States since the early hours of Sunday morning when Omar Mateen attacked the Pulse nightclub in Orlando, serving the gay and lesbian community, killing 49 people and then himself being killed by police. This is a country that has spent the week asking itself, was he mentally ill? Was he homophobic? Did he have extremist ties with Islamic State, to which, of course, he pledged allegiance during the course of the massacre? And the answer to the question is, yes, he may have been all three. I mean, there may be no single answer to any of this. And you can hear similar questions being asked about what may have motivated the killing of Joe Cox. And at the end of the day, both societies may come to the conclusion that there is no single trigger for all of this, that it can be a whole mix of different circumstances that then demonstrate themselves in these absolutely horrific and tragic ways.
Now, President Obama back in Washington after visiting Orlando and paying his own tribute to the 49 people killed by gunman Omar Mateen. Obviously, that visit yesterday overshadowed by the death of Joe Cox also yesterday. So let's talk about what President Obama had to say during that visit.
Well, it won't surprise you to learn that he renewed his call for gun control in the United States. He poured scorn on a suggestion by Donald Trump that if only the revelers inside the Pulse nightclub had been armed, they would have been able to fire back and perhaps bring the situation to a conclusion faster than the police were able to do. And perhaps in the process, Mr. Trump suggested even reduce the death toll. Barack Obama simply said it was laughable to suggest that people going to nightclubs would all be tucking weaponry and pistols into their socks or their trousers. But the most important role that he played in Orlando, of course, was trying to bring some measure of relief to the families and friends of the people who died, to the medical staff who tended to them, and to the emergency staff who responded to the situation. And it was evident from what he said that they had delivered a unanimous message to him.
They asked, why does this keep happening? And they pleaded that we do more to stop the carnage. They don't care about the politics. Neither do I. And neither should any parent out here.
President Obama then once again indicating that the political objections that exist on Capitol Hill to gun control should be overcome. But he knows the political calculation here in Washington has not changed one jot this week. The National Rifle Association is as strong as it has ever been. It is as well financed as it has ever been. And it is as determined to block any expansion of gun control as it's ever been.
And Simon, if we can just finish on presidential politics, this week having a bit of an odd end for Bernie Sanders. I was reading about it in the press this morning. He still hasn't dropped out of the race for the Democratic Party nomination, has he?
No, I mean, a very odd end, I think it has to be said. You know, he lost the last few primaries, including the one that was held here in Washington, D.C., and he announced that he would be addressing his supporters in an internet broadcast last night here in the United States. And there was some expectation that this might be the moment when he finally concedes defeat, drops out of the race and says, I'll endorse Hillary Clinton. It was not to be. It was quite a disjointed presentation by Bernie Sanders, insisting that he's going to take his campaign for the presidential nomination to the Democratic Party's convention in Philadelphia. That's obviously a hopeless task at this point. Hillary Clinton is clearly the candidate and is going to be the candidate. He did, however, indicate that he was willing to work with her, and here's what he had to say about that.
The major political task that together we face in the next 5 months is to make certain that Donald Trump is defeated and defeated badly.
The problem in all of this, of course, is that while Bernie Sanders refuses to concede and suggests that somehow he's still campaigning, his broader message is getting a little bit lost. He's losing prominent supporters who have previously endorsed him and who are now clambering aboard the Hillary Clinton train. And his broader message, the need for reform in the way in which the Democratic Party conducts its primary contests, get rid of this whole process of superdelegates, which most people who examine this conclude is deeply anti-democratic because it imbues grandees of the Democratic Party with enormous amounts of power, even though they haven't necessarily been elected as delegates to the Democratic Convention in Philadelphia. He wants to bring about that kind of fundamental change at the grassroots, but his plea for that kind of change is now, I think, getting a little bit lost because there is so much focus on his failure to concede defeat and stand down. He would, I think, be in a much stronger position if he'd said, OK, I get it. Hillary's going to be the candidate, but now we need to talk about changing the party's manifesto. We need to talk about changing the rules that exist so that next time a grassroots progressive runs for the presidency, they have an easier time of it than I've had. He hasn't directly said that, and he's running the risk at this point of beginning to look a little bit irrelevant.
Well, thank you as ever. That's our Washington correspondent, Simon Marks, live for us in Washington.